I'm Rip Esselstyn, and you're listening to the Plan Strong Podcast. June is National Men's Health Month, and you're going to love today's guest, Robert Klein, who was very unexpectedly diagnosed with testicular cancer in his early 30s. At the time, his daughter was only 2.5, so needless to say, it threw his young family for a major loop. Cut to several months later, and the discovery of whole food, plant-based nutrition. Today, he is cancer-free and is now affectionately known as Broccoli Rob. He's coming up right after this word from PlantStrong. Hopefully you know by now that we're on a mission, a major mission at PlantStrong, to make it easy, delicious, and convenient to eat more plants. One of the most powerful tools in our toolbox is the PlantStrong Meal Planner. Members of the Meal Planner get access to hundreds of delicious, community-tested, whole food plant-based recipes that are all oil-free and made without refined sugar or excessive sodium. The Meal Planner lets you create and save personal menus, and you can reduce waste with our search by ingredient feature to help you find ways to use up what you have on hand. We also have interactive grocery lists that make it super easy to shop, along with cooking videos to help you gain new skills and confidence in the kitchen. You can even have your meal planned groceries delivered by Instacart right to your doorstep. Members get exclusive discounts at Plan Strong Foods and with other partner brands like Vitamix. Simply visit liveplanstrong.com and then click on the meal planner. Save $20 off the annual membership with the code PSSUMMER20. That's PSSUMMER20. Get Plan Strong. Imagine as a young man waking up in severe pain in your groin as if you've been kicked you know where. This is exactly what happened to Robert Klein in April of 2017. And within a few hours, he was shockingly diagnosed with testicular cancer and wheeled into surgery 2 days later. It was a whirlwind of confusion and emotion for this young husband and father. After another surgery in June to remove several lymph nodes, Robert was home recovering when he started to research lifestyle changes and happened upon, you know who, the China study by our friend T. Colin Campbell. This naturally led to other pioneering physicians like my father, Dr. John McDougall, Dr. Michael Greger, Dr. Joel Furman, and many more. And once you've rung the bell, you can't unring it. Robert changed his diet and started moving his body as he never had before. Since 2017, Broccoli Rob, as he is affectionately known, has competed in multiple triathlons and running events, including a full-distance Ironman triathlon and the 2023 New York City Marathon. Way to go, Broccoli Rob. He's also become a Whole Foods plant-based lifestyle consultant, helping people transform their own lives and adopt a healthy and sustainable way of eating. Go, Rob. Hey, Robert Klein, welcome to the Plant Strong Podcast, my Plant Strong brother.
Thanks for having me, Rip. I'm a huge, huge fan of you and your family's work, so I'm very excited to be here.
Well, if I'm not mistaken, that is a plant stock t-shirt that you're wearing.
It is, absolutely, 2021. So I've been following you guys since almost 2017, actually.
Wow. Well, I can't wait to dive into why that is. And it is so appropriate that we have you on the Plant Strong Podcast this month, June 2024, because June is Men's Health Awareness Month. And it seems to me that you always hear about women's awareness around, you know, self-examinations for breast cancer and mammograms and the like, but not as much on the male side. And so I love it that you're here to share your story, which is absolutely very apropos. Yeah, but now before we dive into that, your name is Robert Klein, but you affectionately go by Broccoli Rob. Why Broccoli Rob?
So years ago, actually during the pandemic, one of my friends, one of my best friends from growing up, was telling me I should start an Instagram because I was just starting to cook up a storm, all plant-based. And he's like, you have to think of some kind of catchy name on Instagram for something to grow. And he's like, why not Broccoli Rob? It's a play on words. It's a dish. That's your name. And so it was a joke at first, and then it just sort of stuck. And now it's like, it's everywhere. So, I mean, I've had t-shirts when I was doing Ironman. I had like 25 people wearing Broccoli Rob t-shirts. I have a decal on my bike. It's Broccoli Rob. So, I mean, it's become a whole thing.
that's awesome. Well, I know that lately I've been having a lot of Broccoli Rob. It's kind of like almost a cross between broccoli and asparagus, if you know what I mean.
Yep.
It's very, very cool. I just had it actually last night, I think, in honor of having you on the show today.
Perfect. Yeah,
very fortuitously. But you are in the house of kale now.
There you go. I love it. Love that shirt.
Thanks. So I think for starters, I'd love for you to, and I know you've told your story a bunch, but I don't know if my audience has heard it. So let's start at the beginning. What happened and how did you get diagnosed with cancer and what type of cancer?
So this is going back to now April of 2017. I woke up one morning and for lack of a better term, it felt like someone had kicked me in the you-know-what. And I was just in pain. I literally just woke up in pain one morning. And it ended up being testicular cancer. My wife is like, we got to go to the emergency room. My daughter was 2.5 years old at that point. We dropped her off at daycare. We immediately went to the ER, the local ER. And basically within like 30 minutes, they're telling me that I have testicular cancer. There was they did an ultrasound. They saw something and that's it. And they, you know, and they're just telling me you have cancer.
So a few hours between when you woke up in agony, feeling like somebody kicked you in the nuts.
Right.
To a couple hours later, you've had an ultrasound and they have definitively diagnosed you with testicular cancer. Is that right?
Yes, pretty sure. I mean, no, it was definitive. It was definitely definitive because they were, I ended up basically in 2 days, that was a Wednesday, and that Friday, there was a surgery. I had a surgery to remove the cancer.
Okay. So if you don't mind, and I hope the audience doesn't mind and you don't mind, if I just ask you questions around testicular cancer, because I don't think it's something that is talked about as much as it should be. And just going back, you know, I can think of just off the top of my head, two people that I know that have had testicular cancer. One is a good friend of mine, Lance Armstrong, right. Very, very well publicized about his testicular cancer. And then the other is Scott Hamilton, the Olympic gold figure skater, who also had testicular cancer. But what can you, before we dive into more about your cancer, can you tell me, like, what are the stats on testicular cancer around men, the average age, ethnicity? Do you know the stats on that?
So the average age is very young. I mean, for cancer, I believe in your 30s, it might even be in your 20s, late 20s, early 30s. So I was 32 when I was diagnosed, and I mean, I wouldn't say it's a rare cancer because most people know someone who has had it, but it's definitely not talked about like at all. I mean, like anytime someone mentions men's health or men's cancer, it's always prostate cancer. Mm-hmm. It's never testicular cancer.
Why do you think that is?
Yeah, I mean, could it be? It's taboo. I mean, guys don't want to talk about their nuts, or they're just embarrassed. I think that could definitely be one of the reasons, right?
Right. So let's go back to you. So you get the ultrasound. They're like, okay, you've got testicular cancer. And what was the recommendation? It was basically they want to remove the testicle.
Yes, the recommendation was to basically immediately have the cancerous testicle removed. I'm in the New York City metro area, so they told me to go to the best hospital, which is Memorial Sloan Kettering.
Yeah.
Luckily, which is the crazy part, my father-in-law's like cousin's son married someone who is actually the head surgeon for this exact surgery that I needed. So I ended up getting into his office the next day. Like I said, it was Wednesday. I was in his office in the city on Thursday, and he said, okay, you're going to get this removed tomorrow. And I was like, fine, get it out. I wanted it removed as quickly as I could. And honestly, I felt a lot better. As soon as it was out, I felt a lot better. And it could be just in my mind, but I felt better just knowing it was gone.
Well, I would imagine so. I mean, the thought of, okay, I've got, you know, testicular cancer in my right testicle. I want it out as soon as possible. Did they do any tests to see if it had metastasized at all throughout your body?
Right. So the first step is to do that surgery. And then there are tumor markers in your blood. They can do blood tests. There's two different types of blood tests that they do for this specific cancer. And so my numbers were very, very high, obviously, when I had the cancerous testicle. And then they monitor it for a number of weeks after the surgery to see if the numbers actually stabilize. So if that's the case, they can't actually stage the cancer. And so that ended up having to have me do a second, much more invasive surgery, which was actually, I mean, that's like where my whole journey started, I would say, because I had to go through this surgery where they're basically they opened up my from like right below my sternum all the way down to like my abdomen around my belly button. They sliced my abdomen open and removed or basically took out some of my intestines, put it on the operating table.
Oh boy.
And then just put them aside just for a second. And they removed the lymph node. They basically removed like 100 lymph nodes around the area where it could have spread. And that is how they were able to stage it.
So, okay. I'd like to go back a little bit.
Sure.
Thank you for sharing this. It's very, Absolutely. Very, it's very, very, to me, very courageous of you to share this story. So you woke up that morning and you felt like, you know, you were in excruciating pain. Had you had zero, like, did you ever, like, you know, my right testicle just feels like a little larger than the left, or it feels like it's got a little something on there? That ever happened?
Not really. I mean, I definitely was feeling off looking back on it. I was definitely, there was something wrong. For a few months at least before then. I don't know if I ever actually noticed it was there. But just my energy levels and at some point I was at a party and I was having like stomach cramps and it could have been something related to that. Like, I don't know, but really it was a complete shock to me and my entire family. I mean, it was literally, it was like a kick in the nuts.
So, What is your, I mean, do you have any advice for guys as far as what they should do as far as checking their testicles for any kind of anything that might be suspicious?
Yeah, they do recommend, and I still do that with the one testicle that I still have, to while you're in the shower, when you have warm water and everything is relaxed, to basically just thumb your finger across and see if you can feel any like abnormalities there. And so, I mean, there's plenty of videos that you could watch. Just to, you know, it takes 30 seconds less, and just do it once a month basically. And you're good.
Okay. So in April of 2017, you went in, you had the surgery to have the testicle removed. And then how many months later was it before when you had, the 100+ lymph nodes removed and your intestines taken out and all that other jazz?
Yeah. The surgery was called an RPLMD. Which stands for, I should have had it on my screen here, retroperitoneal lymph node dissection. Uh-huh. I think I got that right. Close enough. So that surgery was June 9th of 2017.
Got it.
And so they wanted to wait like 2 months to see how the numbers normalized, and they thankfully they did normalize to less than zero, the number, which is what it should be.
Is that after the June surgery or after the April surgery you're referring to?
After the April surgery.
Okay.
Yeah, they basically brought me in and they said, okay, your numbers are good. There's an option to do this surgery. You can do this surgery, and basically, if you do this surgery, we will know 100% or with very high percentage if it has spread or not, and you will have a less likelihood of anything returning if you do this surgery, because the first place that this type of cancer spreads is the lymph nodes in the surrounding area. So if they remove those, then it's not going to spread anywhere else, and we know it hasn't spread anywhere else yet. So they suggested to do this surgery. It was really an optional surgery. I mean, everything's optional, really. But this one was like, look, you could do it, and then depending on what we find, we're either going to recommend that you have chemo or not. And so they found nothing. It had not spread, and so I did not need chemo, thankfully. And that was basically the end of my treatment.
So when they gave you the option of having the RP, give me those initials again. R what?
RPL.
Yeah.
Lymph node dissection. RPLND.
Okay. So when they gave you the option of doing the RPLNP surgery or not, did they say are there any side effects to removing all these lymph nodes potentially unnecessarily?
Yes.
I would imagine they're there for a reason.
Right. Well, the lymph nodes, I mean, the side effects, I haven't had any side effects from removing them. Okay. But I think it was actually the surgery was very invasive. I had it in June. It basically, I wasn't back at work until the middle of September. And so, because they basically cut open your abdomen, and so your ab muscles have to completely heal from scratch. It's like I had no core, so I could barely even lift myself out of the bed after the surgery. And so, and there's also some possible issues with the nerve damage that they do when they do the surgery. But this surgeon is the best surgeon in the country, and so, you know, thankfully that was fine. But a lot of there's a risk for having what's called retrograde ejaculation, which means when you ejaculate, you can still ejaculate and everything still works, except it goes into the bladder instead of out of the penis. And so that was certainly a concern.
So it's a backfire.
Right. Exactly. That's exactly okay. Right. Yep. Mm. And I don't know what the percentages are right at this point, but most people regain that within a year or so.
Mm. And when it backfires, is that a bad thing?
There's no issue with it. I mean, you basically just pee it out. So it's not like a health issue, but obviously if you're looking to conceive, that's a problem, right? So, and we were in the middle of our childbearing years. So, you know, I will be completely honest here. We have one amazing child, and this whole old ordeal probably is the reason why we only have one.
Right.
So, you know, it is what it is. I'm thankful for every moment I have with her. And, I mean, she's just an amazing, we call her, her name is Abigail. We call her Avocado Abby.
Broccoli Rob and Avocado Abby. What about your wife? Does she have a nickname?
Yeah, she does, but she doesn't really like it. Her name is Emily. And so we came up with Eggplant Emily. She doesn't like it too much though. Emily Eggplant. I don't remember what order it was, but we've been signing things that way.
Well, all the listeners know that I'm not a huge fan of the eggplant. I haven't figured out how to really make that to where I'm a huge fan of it. If you don't mind, I'd like to kind of summarize for a second here.
Yeah. So
in April of 2017, you had one of your testicles removed. In June of 2017, you had the RPLNP surgery that was successful.
Yep.
Going into that, your blood numbers looked good. They removed the lymph nodes. They sliced you open. You're now recovering at home until September-ish. What happened that made you interested in whole food plant-based nutrition? Who brought it to your doorstep? What documentary did you see? Why?
Yeah, so I had a lot of time at home during those months. And this even happened actually. Yeah, it was during the time between the two surgeries that I ended up finding this plant-based lifestyle. And it was actually my parents who, not even knowing, they were just looking for, you know, they were just looking for something that we can do, right? And they found the China study. And so
I've heard of that.
They gave me this thick book. I mean, it's sitting right here. Here it is.
Yeah.
Still have the same copy, right? It's from 2017. And the moment I read this study that's in there, or at least parts of it, where T. Colin Campbell was able to he was able to reverse cancer growth just by removing or adding the protein casein, which is basically dairy, in rats. And so when I heard that, I immediately stopped eating dairy. I mean, so that was the first thing. That was the first and the hardest thing to get rid of for me personally. And I think that's probably the case for most people.
Were you a big consumer of dairy?
Yes. And I think most people in this country are, and without even being aware of it. Even if I say I don't have milk and I don't have hard cheese, anything that comes out of a box, it basically has dairy, right? It has whey or some type of dairy product that's in there. And so that was my first exposure to the plant-based lifestyle. And then I went down the rabbit hole. So I mean, I went down a huge rabbit hole I found your family, you know, I read the Prevent and Reverse Heart Disease by your father, Essie, and then that got me on the no oil. So then at first I was having these cheeses that had oil in it, the non-dairy cheeses. And then that went off. And then, you know, it just, you know how it goes. It just keeps going. You know, you find Dr. Furman, you find Dr. Greger, and you read all those books. And then once I started doing these, these triathlons, it helped me even further. So I don't want to.
Yeah. So you read the China study, you read how he was able to turn on and turn off cancer growth just by adjusting the level of the protein casein. At what point did you like look around and go, "Hey mom, hey dad, hey, you know, whoever, I'm going to do this." And how did you get started? I mean, going from, you know, the standard American diet to this is it's, you don't just, you know, do it one day.
Right. Right. So I definitely went through stages. I did hire a nutrition, a nutrition coach who didn't follow this, wasn't a whole food plant-based, but was close to it, or at least it was more natural things. And that's what started it. And then once I started learning about whole food plant-based, it got me more in that direction. But I was definitely nervous to tell my wife that I wanted to try this.
Mm-hmm.
She, you know, I mean, I remember it like she makes these, or she used to, at least, she doesn't anymore. She used to make these sweet and sour meatballs with the meat sauce and the pasta and she had made it. And I had already decided I'm not having any more meat. And I was just picking around at the pasta and not having the meatballs. And she asked, she said, "What, you don't like it? I thought you liked it." And so I told her, and I mean, she was very supportive. She's like, "Of course, try it." I mean, she was vegetarian for many years, you know, in college. And even when we met, she was doing it at some point. I made fun of her, of course, for it, like most men do, because I loved my steak. I loved my steak back in the day. But she was fine with it. And so she ended up doing it with me. Not the dairy. She kept eating the dairy, but she did everything else for a couple of years. And then at some point, after she had seen this transformation and just seen the level of energy that I had, and she found her own way into it, and that was with the starch solution. You know, Dr.
McDougall, good
McDougall, and then she started the starch solution in 2020, I believe it was, or 2021. So she's been whole food plant-based since then. And my daughter also, I mean, she's 10, but she's pretty close, right? She says she's a vegan. So it's good.
Well, with a dad named Broccoli Rob, I hope she's proudly wearing that vegan badge. Yeah. I'm glad your wife decided at some point to be done with the casein. That's, no bueno.
No, no, you know, definitely not.
Now, in doing my research, Rob, I understand that because of what happened with them removing some of your intestines and the scarring that can occur with the intestines, they asked you, I think, if I'm not mistaken, to go on a like very, very, very low fat diet.
Yes.
For several months. And so were you doing the plant-based thing when you did that?
Yes. Yes. I remember, at one point I was almost in tears because I couldn't have any fat, and my body was craving it, and I just couldn't. And I was just dropping pounds like every day because I wasn't having anything. Because of the way that they handled the intestines, there was some type of possibility of scar tissue. And so I couldn't even have nuts or seeds either for a certain amount of time. I couldn't have carbonated water. I couldn't have seltzer. I couldn't have any of that or any type of fat. And so, I mean, I had to find specific bread that had zero, like I was eating this like rye bread that was zero fat. I mean, most breads have something in it. Yeah. I mean, I did what I needed to do.
Well, what's interesting there is it sounds like, I mean, just for the audience, you weren't eating zero fat because everything has fat in it. Like even kale is 11% fat by calories,
right.
But you weren't doing any of the kind of overt fats it sounds like, you know, the nuts, the seeds, the avocados, you know, probably things of that nature, olives.
They gave me a list and basically some type of food plan to be on. It was probably a restriction on the amount of fat grams. I don't remember exactly what the details were, but it was, you know, it was low. It was definitely low.
So how long did it take you before you were like back feeling like, you know, the Rob of old? Or I should say the Rob of new.
Yeah, when I was in the hospital, I told my wife before this surgery, I said, when I get out of here, I'm going to train and I'm going to run the New York City Marathon. And so that was my original goal, to come back from this and run the New York City Marathon. And so I started in the hospital. I mean, they have you walking the floor like immediately after, as painful as it was, they would have you walking around and you had to be able to walk stairs before they let you go home from the hospital. And so I was walking. I got myself a Fitbit and I started walking the entire summer. I was just out walking. To the point where like my wife was like yelling at me, she's like, you know, we still had a 2.5-year-old, right? And I was home and, you know, I could have probably taken care of her more than I was. I was literally outside walking because that's what they told me to do. And I was listening to them because I needed to get better. So I ended up doing that. And at some point, I started running in the fall.
Okay. So 2017 fall, were you able to do the New York City Marathon?
Well, that's a whole other story. I can make it as short or long as you'd like, but the short version is I said to myself, that's really hard, 26.2 miles. That's a lot of running. And I've always been interested in triathlon. I've watched the Ironman events and everything. And, you know, why don't I do a sprint triathlon? Because the sprint triathlon is just a very short swim, like a half a mile swim. It's a 12-mile bike. And then you do a 5K. And the 5K, if you're tired, you could just walk. And you could, if you walk it, you're still going to finish it in like an hour. So I decided I wanted to try triathlon. And that's what got me into that. And then that spring, the spring of 2018, I hired a coach, and basically the rest is history. And he's still working with me.
Wow!
And I mean, we are now talking about Boston qualifying. So, I mean, it's a 7-year journey, and it's, you know, every year it's different.
Okay, so what is the qualifying time in your age group for Boston?
It's so my age group is 41 to 45. The qualifying time is 3:10.
3:10. That's wow. That's aggressive. That's getting after it.
Yeah. I'll be honest. I'm not even close to that right now, but this is my new, I'm already a full Ironman. I did that. And now I'm setting my sights on this new goal.
Right? Wow. So tell me, when did you complete the New York City Marathon? Because I know that there's a year or two where they didn't have it because of COVID.
Right. So the plan from my coach was I started in 2018. I did a sprint triathlon. I loved it. I got the bug. I ended up signing up for an Olympic triathlon like a month later. And then after that season ended in 2018, my coach is like, okay, so your original goal was to do the marathon. So let's do the marathon. And so in order to qualify for the New York City Marathon, the year you can either enter the lottery, which almost nobody wins, or you could run 9 races with the New York Roadrunners who puts on the marathon the year before. And then you have to also volunteer in 1 race the year prior to the marathon. And so I took the entire year. I started in January of 2019, and I ran 10 races. I volunteered in 1, and I ran in 9 of them. And that was qualified me to have guaranteed entry into New York City in 2020. I was going to run the 75th anniversary. No, it was 50. I think it was the 50th. It was a big number. It was like one of those flagship anniversary numbers that was supposed to happen in 2020. It never happened. You know, I mean, we all know what happened, right?
Yeah. Yeah. So what year did you end up running it?
I ended up running it last year.
2023.
It took that long to get to run a full standalone marathon. I had run marathons now in an Ironman, on the back end of an Ironman, but never a standalone marathon.
So why not? Year. Why didn't you do it in 21 or 22? Do they have it then?
They gave me the option to defer. Uh-huh. They gave me, in 2020 was canceled. They said you can choose either 21 or 22 to do it. I wasn't sure what was going to happen in 21, so I decided to do it in 22. And so I was training to do it in 22. And then like 3 weeks before, I got COVID.
Ah.
And so 22 was out. And then I had to do it again in 23. And so now my wife saw me do this marathon. I was wearing the Broccoli Rob shirt. They were all cheering. And she basically went home and that week signed up for 9+1. And so now she's training for a marathon for next year. She's doing those 9+1s to do in 2025.
Yeah. How does it feel to be inspiring and motivating others?
It's amazing. It's really, it's one of the best feelings I think that you can have. It's hard to even describe, but it's great.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And so you did an Ironman triathlon. Which Ironman did you complete?
Lake Placid.
Oh, that's a hilly one.
Oh yeah. Oh my God, it's very hilly. Yep.
Hilly and loop courses. Loop swim, I think, and loop bike and run, right?
Very hilly. And it was actually abnormally hot in the mountains that year. So there were lots of people side of the road that did not finish. But wow. that was brutal.
Yeah. Yep. So do you have any aspirations to do another Ironman, or are you good now that you've done it?
No, I think I'm going to do it again. I promised my wife I wouldn't do it for a couple of years, at least maybe until my daughter's in high school or college. So,
yeah.
But I'm still doing the 70.3s. So I think that distance is much more manageable.
So Broccoli Rob, tell me, what is it like? Give our listeners an idea. What is it? Average day of eating for you look like, breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Love to get it kind of a grasp of what that is for you.
Sure. So I know, like most people that eat this way, you know what I'm going to say, right? For breakfast, right? Either Rip's Big Bowl or oatmeal. So it's going to be one of those two. And there's a variation of, you know, I've gotten those, the ingredients to your bowl, so I don't have to necessarily buy your exact one, but it's like 90% of the time it's going to be oatmeal. So it's either overnight oats or I make it in the morning, with as much fruit as I can get. You know, I put the chia seeds in, I put the flax seeds in.
Mm-hmm.
And so that gets me going
good,
in the morning.
How big of a bowl is it? Is it small, medium, large, extra large?
It's a big bowl. I've had to actually, I've purchased a lot of different size, large bowls that are like serving size bowls, like for salads that I do for lunch.
Isn't that, you know, we'll go out of town and we'll go to like stay in an Airbnb and they have these little dinky, like saucer type breakfast cereal bowls. And I just go right down to the cupboard below and I pull out the big old saucepan, you know, the 2-quart saucepan. And that's what I use for my breakfast cereal bowl.
Yep. That makes sense. Makes a lot of sense. I like a cold cereal too. So, I mean, and I always use soy milk. I just like the taste of it. It's more creamy.
Yeah.
And it is protective. Don't let anyone fool you. It is very protective against cancer, specifically breast cancer, but any of these cancers that are hormone related, which is ones that I had, you know, soy milk is very, very healthy.
Yeah. Yeah. No, good point on the soy, especially. I think we should caveat that by saying it's the whole soy products. So, right. You know, soybeans, edamame, tofu, tempeh, right? But not the soy protein isolates and concentrates.
Yeah. Yes. Once they isolate it, it actually does cause some damage.
Yeah.
And that's known.
Yep. Yeah. Okay. So breakfast, usually the oatmeal, the fruit with all the, you know, all the toppings, the usual suspects. What about lunch?
So for lunch, depending on where I am, I will have a salad, like a large salad, like a large salad. We're talking like, you know, a chopped salad sometimes if I have time. So I'm putting in like a pound of the green leafies and then all the vegetables. So, you know, you have cucumbers, you have peppers, tomatoes. I do like pickles. So I have pickles. I like the sour kind. you could throw some nuts and seeds in there. And then also some type of ancient grain to get some more protein in there. And I know people like to say, where do you get your protein? But protein is really, I mean, it's in all of the plants. And that's where all the animals get it from that you're eating. So, but it's going to be like either farro or brown rice that I mix in with there to make it more hearty. And then I like to use a flavored balsamic. So there's a bunch of different companies that sell these flavored balsamics, which is basically just balsamic vinegar with these amazing different flavors.
Yeah. Is there a certain company or brand that you like?
I tend to like the California balsamic just because they have a lot of different options and they always come out with different flavors. There's like a dill. There's a dill pickle one that's really good. There's like a Hawaiian one that's like pineapple. So you can get sweet. You can get savory. There's even like a hickory smoked one.
Chocolate.
And again,
yeah.
There's chocolate one. Yeah, the chocolate one's good to drizzle over. You can definitely. I drizzle the chocolate one over waffles.
Yeah. Have you ever been on the Chef AJ show?
No, I have not. Yeah. It's on my list. Yeah.
Because every one of her guests, you get a four little sample, like 2 ounce or 3 ounce jars of California balsamic vinegars.
Yep. I know those jars well, those little samples, because that's what we bring to like restaurants and things like that, right? The little sample size.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, that's super smart, right? Bring your own dressing, and what is it? It's one ingredient, right? It's your flavored balsamic. Right.
Now I'll keep going with the lunch. So if I'm coming back from like a 2 hour ride, I'm not going to only have a salad, right? So, and I learned this from actually, I think it was from one of your guys.
Yeah.
I think it was from Anne from the cooking show. With your sister and your mother, I slice firm tofu like a deck of cards. They say like a deck of cards, and I throw it on the pan with parchment paper, and just a little bit of coconut aminos, and we bake that for 30 minutes. And I do this every week. I do this, and I do it just once a week, and I have for the entire week. And so I eat that just as snacks. I make sandwiches out of that. So there's a whole different variety of sandwiches you can make with that. And believe it or not, I have not gotten tired of that meal in over 2 years.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's like you put arugula on it, you put the tofu on it with some type of dressing that you can make, or even just avocado. It's great.
Yeah.
Pickles, tomatoes.
And then remind me, because maybe you said it and I can't remember. Typically, what is your leafy green of choice that you like for the foundation for your salads? Is it arugula? Is it kale? Is it spinach? Is it chopped romaine?
I like spinach. I know not to have too much of it. I do like to rotate it. There's a mix from Trader Joe's that's like field greens. That's good. There's a baby kale that I just started getting into, which is definitely interesting because it doesn't have that. It's not as bitter. A lot of people don't like kale, including my wife, because it's just the texture of it is actually very,
I find the curly kale is a little bit more unwieldy. I find that the dinosaur kale, the lucinato, is much more friendly. And even texture wise, It's cool.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Mm.
Okay. Let's keep going on your, what a day with broccoli Rob looks like.
So yeah, for dinner, it's going to be, I like to make stir fries. Mm-hmm. So I learned how to cook without oil. Number one, I took these online cooking classes with Ruby. I've gone through two classes with them. The Forks Over Knives plant-based certification, and then the professional, there's a pro one that you can take. So I have these techniques on how to saute without oil. And there's just, you know, whatever produce is in season is what we use. And so, you know, we just make a stir fry, again, with a grain. And we like to make these like, taco bowls, we do sometimes with corn tortillas. We even sometimes microwave the corn tortillas to make them into actual, like those tostadas, I think, you call them.
Yeah.
So we do that. I'll do a tofu scramble even sometimes, even for dinner, just because I've gotten into that recently. And the dinner is where I play with a lot of the different recipes that I've collected over the years.
Right. That's really good to know. So would you say that maybe part of your success and the reason why it's been so sustainable for you is you keep the breakfast and the lunch kind of very similar. Maybe you adjust, you know, some of the toppings you put on it, and that just gives you a great foundation for the first two meals of the day.
Yeah, I would definitely agree with that. The oatmeal keeps me satisfied and full as long as we have enough of it. You can never have too much. I know your father says he has it twice sometimes in a day, you know, so.
No, for sure. For sure. he has it once for breakfast and then he has a little after dinner snack.
Right.
Yeah. Well, that's awesome. So I love everything that I'm hearing, Broccoli Rob. I love that you've absolutely conquered cancer. You've conquered the whole food plant-based diet. You are active. You're running marathons. You're doing, you know, Ironman triathlons. You're an inspiration for your family and your friends. Tell me a little bit about what you got going on with this group that you're a part of called PPMNY and why that should be of interest to us.
Sure. So I hooked up with Plant Powered Metro New York is what the organization is called. In 2020, I was just finishing up my plant-based nutrition, a graduate certificate from E. Cornell, which is based out of the T. Colin Campbell Center for Nutrition Studies. And in the curriculum there, they were talking about these plant pure communities throughout the country. And so there are these pods throughout the country of people that are living this lifestyle. And so I was looking to create a pod in my area, which I live in Connecticut, which is a suburb of New York City, my part of Connecticut actually. And so there was nothing in my area. And so I wanted to create one. And I was looking on their website and I found this PPMNY, which just had incorporated like 6 months or a year before that. And they were actually in New York City. There were like five or six of these pods, like one in every borough. And then there was like two in Manhattan. Liana, who's the network director there, basically said, why don't we join forces and just create this massive pod that then turned into a nonprofit organization for plant-powered education, basically, in these communities in New York City.
That's fantastic.
And so I found them. I got involved first by mentoring, and then I was doing. They have these. They match you with people that are looking to do this, and you could just mentor them. And then I also got involved with their 21-day jumpstart. And so I started mentoring groups that were going through these 21-day jumpstarts. And this was during a pandemic, so it was all virtual. I was able to do it from the comfort of my own home, which was amazing, actually. And it really got me all this experience. Like I went through these, like I've helped hundreds of people through these jump starts now at this point. And it's just an amazing organization. Yeah. And so at one point they suggested that I get certified as I get licensed basically as a Food for Life instructor to teach these courses that are the cooking courses that run through PPMNY. And so I just did that in last fall. And so that's where I am.
So do you have anything going on this month that we can all partake in?
So we do. So we have, it's called the Savoring Health Smart Eating Strategies for Men. It's a 3-part series for the month of June, which is Men's Health Month. We've actually found 4 Food for Life instructors that are all men. So all 4 of us guys are running these sessions. And it's 3 Sundays, June 9th, June 23rd, June 30th. And you can register if you're interested. If you go to ppmny.org.
And this podcast is not going to air until after June 9th. Can you sign up for the last 2?
Or you have you can sign up until the Friday before the Sunday class. The one on June 23rd is called Gauging the Pressure, How Food Can Improve Blood Pressure. And then the one June 30th, which I'm leading, is Better in the Bedroom, How Food Can Improve Sexual Wellness.
Well, you'll have to give us a little bit of a peek under the sheets on that one.
Yep. So it's tinyurl.com/ppmny to register if anyone's interested in that.
Wow. That's really cool. And so if people are you personally taking on clients right now?
Yes, I am. So I do have a website. It's robertpkline.com. You can also get to my website through choppingbroccolirob.com. So you could find me on Instagram at choppingbroccolirob. And then for a complete schedule of my cooking classes for the upcoming months, it's on my website. We're going to be, if you're local to the Stanford area, I have 2 classes scheduled with my partner, Maddie Sobel, at a farm, a local farm called Fairgate Farm. And that's going to be June 11th and August 8th. And we're going to be just teaching a class on whole food plant-based cooking with the produce that's, local to the farm.
Yeah. That's great. Wow. Well, it sounds like you have really, you found your higher purpose.
Absolutely. Yep.
Thanks in no small part to testicular cancer. Looking back on it, do you find it's a good thing? What happened to you?
Yeah, it was a blessing in disguise. Mm-hmm. My whole family and I, we went through a lot. So, I wouldn't wish this on anyone, but I know 100% I would not be the person I am if that didn't happen. And I wouldn't be sitting here talking to you if that didn't happen. And I certainly wouldn't be an Iron Man if that did not happen.
You're right.
There's no way that would have happened. So,
yeah. Well, good stuff. Broccoli Rob, I have thoroughly enjoyed meeting you. This is the first time that we've ever connected.
Yeah.
And again, I want to thank you for putting it all out there, sharing your brush with testicular cancer with everyone and all the great work you're doing today. And I look forward to the next time that our paths cross.
Appreciate it, Rip. Thanks for having me.
Yeah. Hey, give me a virtual Plant Strong fist bump, my Plant Strong.
There we go, baby.
Boom.
Boom.
See ya.
Thanks.
We hear a lot about the importance of self-examinations for women's breast cancer, but we just don't hear enough about men's health and prevention. I want to thank Robert for being so open and honest with his journey. We have to normalize these types of discussions in order to help save lives. To learn more about Broccoli Rob, visit his site at Robert P. Klein. Klein is spelled K-L-E-I-N.com. and I'll be sure to link to that in the show notes. If you want to learn more about his lectures and work with PPMNY, visit ppmny.org. I'll have that there for you too in the show notes. As always, thanks so much for listening and sharing the Plant Strong podcast. And always, always keep it plant strong. The Plant Strong podcast team includes Carrie Barrett, Lori Kordowich, and Amy Mackey. If you like what you hear, do us a favor and share the show with your friends and loved ones. You can always leave a 5-star rating and review on Apple Podcasts or Spotify. And while you're there, make sure to hit that follow button so that you never miss an episode. As always, this and every episode is dedicated to my parents, Dr. Caldwell B. Esselstyn Jr. and Ann Cryle Esselstyn. Thanks so much for listening.